Damien and friends, hope you're having a great week. It's going to be a short week. You have at least a divide in the middle. Most of you will have 4th of July off. You'll be definitely thinking of some great Americans. Maybe it's in your family. Famous Americans, certainly in Benjamin Patton's family. He is the grandson of George S. Patton and the author of Growing Up Patton, and his dad, an esteemed officer, a decorated officer himself. What a great family. What a great story. Benjamin, welcome to Kilmeade and Friends. We had you on Fox and Friends, and I couldn't wait to get you up here.
Pleasure to be here, Brian.
So this book was put together, really, because all your dad's journals burned, right?
Right.
And you sat down and talked to him.
Right.
And you said, basically, tell me your story as you know it.
Right. I thought it would inspire him to actually take a crack at maybe writing a memoir. And in the end, he didn't. But the transcripts of the interviews I did with him about his life ended up being used for a book that a man named Brian Sobel wrote called The Fighting Pattons. And so I was glad to see that. And then I got to use this as the basis for my book.
So you are somebody, you talk about your relationship with your dad and your dad's relationship with your grandfather. So let's start right there. Your dad was a general himself, correct?
He was. He was a major general. He graduated 6 months after his dad. He graduated from West Point 6 months after his dad died as a result of a freak car accident in Germany.
Right. So he was a general, fought in 3 wars.
Yeah, he fought while my grandfather...
3 tours in Vietnam.
Right, 3 tours.
Two wars.
And he fought in Korea and then in Vietnam, 3 tours. But interestingly, he actually saw more frontline combat than his father and was just as highly decorated.
Wow. So talk about your dad's relationship with his father. Number one, when your grandfather was in an accident and would ultimately take his life and he was paralyzed, alive for a few days, the word was, stay and finish your studies, don't come visit me. Did he regret not going?
Oh, he certainly did. He didn't have a choice. His mother said, you're not going. Now, that may have been because she was concerned about exams, but I think there's a piece of it that it was the wife of the general wanting to have that time with him, not thinking he might die, of course, but wanting to have that time with him alone, having not spent much time with him either, my grandmother. And so a little bit selfish, probably went over there and spent time with him for those 12 days while he was in traction and then got pneumonia and died. And my father was upset about that. And then, and then 6 months later to graduate. And as I actually told you on Fox and Friends, he graduated and some old veteran came up to him at graduation and said, you'll never be the man your father was, but congratulations anyway.
Yeah. And that's the type of legacy really emblematic of how he could have lived his life trying to overcome his dad's shadow, but he didn't.
Right.
Even though he went in the same profession as his dad.
Right, exactly. And, a lot of times I talk about the book and about my father, and really my father's the titan in my eyes because he's the one that I really knew. And there's so many examples of where he drew on his father's lessons and the wisdom that he had, and certainly the idea of visible personality. My grandfather was famous for always being seen going forward through the troops in his command car and a Jeep. My dad was the same way. In fact,
always in the front lines, too.
He was always in the front lines, and that's why when he commanded a 4,000-man regiment, mostly commanding it from a helicopter, he was shot down like 3-4 times and earned 2 Distinguished Service Crosses and a Silver Star, and a Purple Heart, which all come just below the Medal of Honor. So he got in harm's way quite a bit. Mm-hmm. But I think what's interesting, though, is that while he drew on his father's persona and all the things he learned about leadership, he also really became his own man. I mean, he interpreted that legacy in his own way to make it really authentic and his own.
Well, and obviously he did. And you sit there and you talk to him because you guys also lived overseas. You lived in Germany
yep.
for a while.
Yep.
Talk about the irony of becoming friends with the Rommels.
Right. It's something else.
Erwin Rommel, the famous general that opposed your grandfather.
Right. And Erwin Rommel, as you know, was forced to commit suicide in the fall of 1944 in October because he had been implicated. Somebody had mentioned his name when the Gestapo and the SS were all going around interviewing people trying to find out who was involved in the von Stauffenberg bomb plot. And so somebody gave Rommel's name, and I don't necessarily think he was. I think he was too proud to do it that way. I think what he wanted to do was to have a wholesale surrender of his armies and then leave Hitler no choice but to give in. But anyway,
because he knew it was fruitless and he knew Hitler was nuts.
He did. But interestingly, he was considering that, and then 3 days before the von Stauffenberg bomb plot, he was strafed by a British Spitfire and had multiple skull fractures. I think his driver was killed, and so he was in recovery all the rest of the year. And then the SS came and surrounded his house and said, "You can either take a cyanide pill or." And go with us, and we'll say you went down in history as a great German general, or you can go to trial and you'll lose, and your family will all go to labor camps. And so he took the former. But interestingly, these soldiers are really chivalrous in a certain sense back in those days. So my grandfather had always wanted to meet Rommel, and my dad wanted to meet the widow and the son. And so eventually in the 50s, my father went to was stationed in Stuttgart and set up an appointment to meet the son, Manfred Rommel, who was a bureaucrat in the government. And they became great friends. And what was interesting is we had multiple tours there in Stuttgart because that's where most of the American military is based. And so we would go over to their house on Christmas Eve, and they actually shared a birthday of Christmas Eve. So imagine we're going over there and they're trading memorabilia from their fathers, and it's just fabulous. It was a blast.
I know. And by the way, we're talking with the author of Growing Up Patton, Benjamin Patton, along with Jennifer Scrubby. You've written this book, Reflections on Heroes, History, and Family Wisdom. And some of the family wisdom was actually gleaned from battle and how they acted in battle. You talk about, too, Benjamin, sitting down with your father. You were close to going to Annapolis, correct?
Correct.
To the Naval Academy, and you were close, and you know you write that you disappointed him by at the last minute saying, I'm not going.
Yeah, I probably did. I think he just looked at my background and my interests, and I had taken up flying, and I knew a lot about military history, and I certainly loved the military and used to hunt and fish with them all the time. And so I remember he drew up, in my senior year in high school, he drew up a pro and con list, and the pro list was very, very long, and it was like two or three, and the con list, like, got to get up early, you know, got to press your clothes, you know,
yeah,
that kind of stuff.
Cut your hair.
Yeah, do more push-ups. And I just, it was more of a lifestyle thing, and I just felt that I looked at my father's history, and I looked how he had to go into that field like an NFL linebacker to really succeed with that huge legacy he faced. And I just thought, you know, I just blinked a little bit. And what's great is I'm now in my 40s, it's circled back, and I feel, you know, I feel good about the work I'm doing with veterans, which we can talk about. But as I've told you before, I think deep down, while he was disappointed initially, I think what he really wanted was for me and anyone to find their sort of authentic path. And I think that's something he always told me, and he told other people in his speeches, he used to quote Ecclesiastes and say, whatsoever your hand findeth itself to do, do it with thy might.
Right. And that just says whatever you do, whether it's sweeping the streets or whether it's being an NFL linebacker, play it with passion. And we'll talk about what you're doing for the military. So a lot of people know Patton from George C. Scott and the movie Patton.
Certainly.
Which is an all-time classic. How close is that to how your father described your grandfather?
I think my father and his sister, who was alive when the movie came out, one of his two sisters was still alive. They felt that George C. Scott really didn't look like my grandfather. He didn't sound like him. If you ever find some of the rare audio material about my grandfather, you'll see he has kind of a high-pitched voice with a patrician lilt to it, and he's like, oh, damn, we're going to get those Germans. We're going to, you know, take those tanks out. And my dad and George C. Scott both had this very towering voice that you just could not mistake. And so when my dad said, you know, get to your room, I'm going to stomp you good, like, I moved quickly. There was no violence
your
in my household.
Your dad had it. Yeah. Your grandfather
right.
didn't.
There was no violence in my household, but the threat of violence was enough to get you to
and
do
plus,
what you
everybody's
were
armed. Yeah. Right? Oh, yeah. What gun you're going to get shot in.
Like, true, but I learned how to shoot when I was five as well, so we all had guns. It was no big deal.
Fight.
But yeah, I'd say that the portrayal was very well received in the sense that he really conveyed and exuded his persona. The only criticism was that they felt that that he was portrayed as someone who loved war. He said, by God, I love it. But I think he loved the game of war, the tactics of war, the camaraderie, but not war per se.
Right. He had nicknames, you write, for Eisenhower. He called him?
First of all, you had to write things in to get past the censors. So he would write initials for Eisenhower. And Eisenhower's initials are DDE, Dwight David Eisenhower. But my grandfather would write for my grandmother DD, and that meant divine destiny. Because he always had an idea that he was a little bit overly pandering to the other allies, and particularly to Montgomery and Churchill, and he felt that he had his eye on higher office. And whether that's true or not, I think it probably was. And then for Bradley, sadly, they were very different stylistically in terms of their approach to warfare. I mean, Bradley was an infantryman. He was really a grunt, and he was very organized and a logistician. And my grandfather called him the tent maker. Because he just said, you know, whenever there was an opportunity to take a break, you know, and think about something, it was Bradley. And my grandfather, most of the time correctly, occasionally made a mistake, but most of the time correctly, he always felt like moving was the answer. And he was a cavalryman at heart, and he just felt like, you know, he says, by the time, people are always worried about my flanks. By the time the enemy's familiar with my flanks, I'll have cut his throat.
Right, and the speed. And he was also the first tank commander, correct, in the history of warfare?
Pretty much.
American, World War
I. Right. He started the first tank unit in World War I.
Did he design the first tank?
No, but he was involved in it. And he was involved in testing chassis and doing a lot of the early testing of the tank. But he, it was a very... it's amazing that he was involved in 1917 and 18 in tanks. And then he was put back to horse cavalry. So when the Germans were annexing Austria, my grandfather was still in horse cavalry, believe it or not. So it was only like 1939 he got out of horse cavalry and back, and they remobilized the armor corps. So
can you imagine that? Going, I finally could put the horse away and get in a motor vehicle?
It's just ridiculous.
Right, but he also had a nickname, so he was Tent Maker. Now, your grandmother, I understand, was a little bitter at Eisenhower. Didn't want to talk, was mad at him. Why?
Right. Well, I mean, she really didn't feel, I mean, of course, her name was Patton, not Eisenhower, so she really felt that he didn't stand by him the way he should have, particularly after the Sicily slapping incidents. And at the end of the war when he was relieved, and so there was a case where in 1951 I believe it was, and Eisenhower was running for president, and my father's older sister Beatrice had died in her 40s, and so Mrs. Eisenhower called the house, and my mother, who was engaged to my dad, answered the phone. And she was gonna, you know, they were calling from the campaign train and to offer their condolences, and my grandmother wouldn't take the call.
It's just still angry.
Yeah, so that's just the way it is. But, you know.
Now, it's just amazing. You mentioned the Sicily incident with the slapping of the soldier.
Mm-hmm. Two of them,
two incident. So tell me how that relates to what you're doing now, the irony.
Well, it is ironic because I actually gave a speech last month about the book, and someone, it actually was my brother, believe it or not, asked me from the audience, in the back of the audience at the book launch, said, do you think our grandfather had PTSD? Or our father. And what's interesting is when you think about it, on the face of it, you'd say absolutely not. But their reaction to what's called post-traumatic stress was so violent at the time. My grandfather, with the slapping incidents, he just didn't do well with those kind of people. And my father, similarly in Korea, he took a steel helmet to someone that had left their post during
a firefight.
I remember that.
He was getting hit. He was getting shelled. He was tired of getting shelled. He went and found out why he was getting shelled. The guy was sitting there smoking.
Right. And my dad put a gun to his head and said, you know, I'm going to, you know, get back to your post right now, or I'm going to take you out, and I'm going to have you tried for misbehavior before the enemy, and the penalty for that is death. So he was trying to scare the guy into what he thought.
Didn't he beat him senseless?
He beat him up. I don't know if senseless. The guy went back to his post, and I think he transferred him out the next day. But the point was, he felt that he was trying to give him back some level of dignity. And again, probably the wrong thing to do, but you can sort of understand maybe his thinking in a way. Some people can. But yes, so that's one area where, while they care deeply for their soldiers, and they're famous for that, it was always, do you have enough socks? Do you have good food? You know, my grandfather was famous for making sure his soldiers got a hot meal. My dad one time served an entire meal to a tank company on the line. It took them all day because they hadn't eaten a hot meal in 30 days, and I think you may have read that in the book. But still, they did not have any understanding, or their generation really had no understanding for what's now, what then was called maybe battle fatigue or malingering, and now it's PTSD. And so it makes me sort of happy that I'm now able to work with soldiers and in a way that allows us to sort of explore and deal with this
I want to get specific and find out if any, because we have a lot of the military men and women listening to the show, and I think we're also carried on the Armed Forces Network, so people can maybe reach out to you.
Sure.
We're going to come back with more from Benjamin Patton. He wrote an incredible book called Growing Up Patton that only basically you and your brothers could write, Reflections on Heroes' History and Family Wisdom. Back in a moment.